Welcome to the HMO Experience, the UK's only HMO-focused property podcast, where every Monday, Matt, Jamie and Steve will inform and inspire you about everything to do with HMOs, rent to rent, and how to set up and grow a successful HMO business, whether you're just starting out or you're already on your way.
Hi guys, I'm Matt Harrison and welcome to episode 14 of the HMO Experience. Let me introduce you to the HMO Dream Team. Jamie, say hello, Jamie.
Hi, everyone.
And Steve, say hello, Steve.
Hello, Steve.
Hello, Steve. Now, we are on episode 14, and we're going to be covering off furniture requirements for your HMO property. Now, on the previous episode, Jamie had an interview with Jo Ballston, and she went through some interior design hints and tips. So make sure you check that one out. In this episode, like I said, we're going to go through furniture selections, like your standard requirements for setting up your HMO property. So that being said, I'm going to hand you over to Steve. Going to kick us off.
Cool. Okay. So what do we put into our houses? Well, first of all, we work out how much it's going to cost.
Yeah.
So that's quite important. And in the deal analyzer that we use, we have a very prescribed list of the items that go into the house. Make sure that we understand the cost of those items, so that if we are looking to invest our own money in buying those items outright, then we've got money in the bank that we can afford it.
Cool.
Or if we are going to lease those furnitures, then we can put the quote into our leasing provider and they can give us an appropriate lease rental back. And the reason why we do that up front is so that we get the property to pay for the furniture, so that comes out of cash flow if we're going to lease it. Or if we're going to buy it ourselves, then that will be listed as an asset against the business and go on the capital side. So it's important that you decide how you're going to fund that and account for it accordingly.
Nice.
But once we've made that decision, we know what the costs are. We have a prescribed list. So every room has a double bed. There are two types of double beds. Not many people knew there were two types of double beds.
Big and small.
A big and small bed, yes. So there's a 4'6"
double
bed.
Okay.
And that's a big double. I mean, you're 8'9",
yeah.
So that's probably a small bed. But and then there's a 4-foot double bed. So the reason why that's important is because it depends on the size of room you have.
Mm.
So I can share a story whereby we were mentoring a client and he had bought a 6-bed property and he was looking to convert that into a 6-bed ensuite HMO.
Yeah.
And he got all the lovely floor plans done, looked amazing. And on the floor plans was just empty space. So we said to him, you should go back and get your architect to drop in the actual furniture.
Mm.
And he said, well, why on earth would I want to do that? He said, well, do it and we'll tell you why.
Yeah.
So he went off and done it, come back a couple of weeks later with the floor plans in. Lo and behold, if he put 4'6" beds in, the door wouldn't open to the bedroom. You put your 4-foot bed in, and the door just managed to open. So if he'd gone ahead and bought a load of 4'6" beds, he would have had a problem.
Yeah.
Not only would he have had to return all of that furniture, but that puts you under extra pressure. You might have customers pitching up the next day. So it's really important that you have the appropriate furniture and appropriate bed size for that room. We tend not to do singles in our properties, but there's no reason why you wouldn't put a single bed in if that's what's required. But most of our customers like to have double beds, and that's why we tend to go with the 4-foot double beds as opposed to the large ones. We also provide bedside tables. So ideally, we're providing 2 bedside tables, one either side of the bed. We provide wardrobes. And again, here, it all depends on the size of the room. So if it's a large room, then we'll have a full size hanging wardrobe. But if it's a smaller room, then we'll look to put in different solutions. I can't quite remember the name, but I think they're called gentlemen's wardrobes, which sounds a bit sexist, so apologies for ladies out there. I think it's called. But this is where you've got hanging space above, and then you've got... And then you've got... Then you, sorry, we just had a minor person malfunction outside our room. But that's where you then have drawers underneath. And so therefore you're combining hanging storage and drawer storage in one unit, and therefore you save on the space.
Yeah.
We also, if the room is large enough, put in chest of drawers. So all of this stuff sort of goes into a standard furniture pack for the room. Of course, there's soft furnishings and stuff, but maybe we'll talk about that on another podcast. Mm-hmm. So that's what we do for the room. We understand what the cost is. We decide whether we're going to buy it outright or whether we're going to lease it.
Yeah.
And then we choose the appropriate furniture for the size of the room.
Cool. I think we don't put in bedside tables. I don't think our rooms are generally big enough. Although sometimes we do put in an extra chair for some people to sit and look out the window, yeah. Which is all right. Just like gaze at the road below and see what the world go by.
I mean, that's an interesting point because the target market that we go for are typically sort of young professionals. So they're coming out of university, might be a first jobber. It might be their second career move. And in some of the rooms... they are a little bit small.
Yeah.
So we have the 4 foot double bed. We have the combined hanging space and drawer space. But we also do provide a desk space and a chair. Mm. And what we found that people really like is if that's collapsible and that can be put away for when they're not using it, they've then got the more space in the room as opposed to a fixed desk and a fixed chair.
Yeah.
So we go to Argos. We buy their standard white collapsible desk.
Yeah, the Habitat one. Right?
Yeah. So I think it's about $49.99 and a chair that goes with it, which is about 15 or 16 quid. But the real utility element of that is that it's collapsible. It can go out the way.
Yeah.
And save on that space.
Nice. So look, Jamie, Steve's spoken about either leasing or buying furniture. So I guess before we go on to the details of that, what in your experience have you had a lot of fun building furniture? Where you had it?
Have you seen my face? Those of you watching, there's no fun on my face. I'm doing anything practical. So so Steve and I massively cocked up with our. Can I say that? Sorry. Steve and I naively made a silly mistake with our very first rent for an HMO. It was a place called Linton Lodge. It was an amazing property, 6-bedroom. Massive, great property, and Steve and I thought we'd save money by trying to do everything ourselves. I'm sure I've shared the story already. But from a furniture point of view, we went to IKEA, and each of us had a car. We went to IKEA in Milton Keynes, half an hour away. 10 trips later, we had flat pack furniture to fill the house. We had bedside tables, 2 of those in each room, as Steve said. We had a chest of drawers, we had a wardrobe, we had a dining room table and 6 chairs. We had sofas. I mean, you name it, the list goes on and on.
Vicious.
Which was, idiotic, to say the least. What made it even worse is it took Steve and I, who aren't necessarily, myself, not exactly the most practical person in the room, but I can handle an Allen key.
Yeah.
But that Allen key from IKEA, I tell you what, never worked so hard. It took a week to put that furniture together. So, I mean, just seriously, aside a minute, for a start, what a waste of time. The time it took us to go to and from IKEA to put it all together, we could have had that property if we'd known at the time, fully delivered, much more robust furniture without any of our time and effort expended. We lost a week putting that furniture together. Oh, we could have had that property marketed and filled within a couple of days. So it's lost income.
Yeah.
So even though I can now use an Allen key better than I used to be able to, please, 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 if you want to build a scalable professional HMO business, whether you're buying or doing rent to rent, make sure you don't do some of these jobs.
Yeah.
Don't get flat pack furniture, in my opinion. It's okay, it looks nice initially, but HMOs have high wear and tear, and it might not last.
Yeah.
So what we strongly recommend, and we always teach this, again, through personal experience, is get someone to deliver really good, robust furniture that is well made.
Yeah.
We've had furniture in some of our HMOs for 5 years and never had any problems at all because they're well made. Yeah. So, yeah.
And is that through like furniture packs? I know that there's quite a few companies out there where, you know, you can furnish your rooms or your service departments as well if you want to go down that route.
Yeah.
Like having it all, they come and deliver it and they build it and it's all ready and set to go.
Yeah. So you've got the providers, and there's loads of them if you just Google them, providers who come and do all the work for you. So they'll bring all the kit, they'll put it all together, they'll take away all the rubbish and they'll set up the room, which is one thing.
Yeah.
Another way option you might want to think about is get them to bring ready-made, ready-assembled furniture.
Mm-hmm.
Much more robust, much quicker to go in and out. One of the last HMOs that we bought up in Coventry was a 6-bed, 3-story HMO. The guys from the furniture company we use called Fusion were in and out with all the furniture within about 2.5 hours.
Oh, wow.
No more allergies. So just think about it. So it's definitely worth doing, I think, to get others to do the work for you and also to have more robust furniture.
Well, look, just to add my experience into the mix, so the first property we took on, I spent the best part of maybe 2.5 weeks sanding and painting.
Oh, my God.
Already existing furniture. Now, the good thing was so this was over the summer last year, so June, super hot. So it was quite nice to lug all the furniture outside, put all the plastic down, sand it all down, paint it, have a couple of coats of paint, then lug it all back inside and realize, okay, we're still missing a bunch of beds. We're still missing not bedside tables, chest of drawers. But that is definitely not something that I did again, simply because it just took far too long. But also, going to IKEA, so one of our other properties, you know, IKEA just sucks you in. You go there with a plan and you think, I'm going to stick to this plan. And before you know it, like 4 hours later, you come in with twice the amount of stuff that you wanted to buy. But the good thing with that experience was we did find someone to build all the IKEA furniture.
Oh, cool.
So even though we had to pick it up and get it delivered to the house, like someone came and within 2 days he built all the wardrobes, the chest of drawers, the chairs, some of the kitchen equipment. So that was quite nice.
Brilliant.
It was a decent Sounds experience. Good.
Yeah, the whole IKEA thing, that's why, you know, Mrs. Medill never has me in tow go to IKEA. I neatly swerve that. Actually, I don't think I've ever been since Steve and I did that first HMO together.
Yeah,
I haven't been back since.
No, anyway.
I'm sure there's other very good
things. I don't like it. There is.
Do you think we'll get a sponsor from IKEA for this podcast?
IKEA, if anyone's watching from IKEA, we would love you to sponsor this episode in particular, please.
Well, talking about IKEA, a good friend of ours, Jenny, she was talking last year about IKEA, I think, we're offering a leased package. Not only could you buy the stuff from IKEA for landlords, but you could also get it leased by them. So I don't know if that actually came live. Maybe that's something we can check out, and we'll put on a link on the bottom of this episode for people to take a look at. But there's lots of companies out there. Do shop around, because there is quality and there is quality. and we like quality. So the company we use is Fusion, as Jamie mentioned, and I've actually done this. On their website, there's a picture, I think, of the MD jumping up and down or standing on one of his bedside tables. So I thought, well, if he can do that,
yeah,
I can do that, expecting to go right through it. But I didn't. I managed to stand on it, and it is really robust. And as Jamie says, the furniture that we bought for Linton Lodge disappeared about 2 years ago. Maybe 2.5 years ago, but the first furniture that we bought from a proper what I would call furniture manufacturer, is still going strong. Some of it's a fail, but that's down to tenant abuse rather than the furniture failing. But do go out there, do check around, do get your prices, and make sure you're getting a good deal.
Nice. Now, I'm already thinking, just before we leave the IKEA bit, sorry, IKEA, we're really ramming home the fact that we want you to sponsor this.
I won't have a bad word against IKEA.
Don't IKEA have like a room, an app, where you can organise the furniture in your room? I'm pretty sure that I've had someone mention that. So you kind of take the rough dimensions of your room, and then you can go through their catalogue and see what furniture you want to have in there.
Yeah.
So have you guys had any experience of using that?
I've tried it, I couldn't get it to work, if I'm honest.
Really?
Yeah, I couldn't get it to work.
But that's why we use Magic Plan. We've spoken about Magic Plan before. But one of the things we do in Magic Plan is, sorry, I always crack up when I hear the word do. Sorry. But one of the things that we do in Magic Plan is put in the actual dimensions of the furniture that we're buying.
Right.
Because if you are using a planning tool, particularly if it's from America, it'll have American sizes in there.
Okay.
And Americans are a little bit larger than us on the whole. And therefore, you need to make sure that you match the size of the furniture or the dimensions of the furniture that you're buying if you're going to drop that into your room plans so that it's as accurate as possible.
Mm.
As I said, with one of our clients, not doing that exercise as part of your planning is fatal as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Because you could go out and spend a whole bunch of money on furniture that isn't used, but it's also the time that's lost. There's also, I think, a move towards fitted furniture as well.
Okay.
So a good friend of ours promotes fitted furniture in his HMOs. And some of the benefits of fitted furniture is that it's longer lasting.
Okay.
It is more expensive to install, and you have to have a good designer that is able to sort of plan that room, create the dimensions, and give that specification to the work team that is going out to do that. I have been told of a couple of instances where that hasn't worked very well, whereby the client gave a specification to the workman, and the workman went and got some kitchen worktop and tried to create this desk space out of kitchen worktop that kind of didn't work. And so you have to be very particular about the look, the aesthetics, the dimensions of what you're trying to achieve. And certainly I would, if I was ever going to consider to do that, I would be employing and working with someone that's done that successfully, rather than asking my carpenter to build something, because the carpenter he'll have the practical and he'll have the skill to do it, but he won't have the aesthetics in terms of the design, the type of wood, the color, all that type of stuff. And it was a horrendous mess.
Yeah.
One thing I want to say, if you don't mind just jumping in, I think fitted furniture is amazing, especially if you're looking to buy and then convert properties into HMO. I wouldn't necessarily suggest it for rent HMO, because it's somebody else's house, unless you get the permission, of course, of the owner.
Yeah.
But it's extra time, effort, and money, potentially. But an amazing potential solution for definitely putting you looking to buy.
And I think we should also give a shout out. I mean, the best person that I know that does that is Julian Maurice.
Yeah, he's great.
So contact Julian. He's all over Facebook. I'm sure.
We'll stick the link in the episode.
We'll stick Julian's link. I'm sure if you messaged him, he would give you some advice and guidance on that fitted furniture. He's the best person that we know if you're interested in doing fitted furnitures in your HMO.
Yeah, nice. So I think this is a nice little segue, really, because my experience has obviously only been rent to rent. You guys both buy and do rent to rent. So, presumably in your bought properties, you buy the furniture, and in your rent to rent, you lease, or what? How?
You might well think that, but no, we don't. So again, it comes back to Steve's point right at the beginning of this podcast episode, which is: are you going to buy and therefore own a bit more of an asset in your business, or are you going to lease? So again, with our major, excuse my language, HMO rent-to-rent cock-ups in the early days, years and years ago, we didn't know about leasing furniture. So therefore, we bought. And we spent between £5,000 and £7,000 on buying brand new furniture for some of the big HMOs that we took on board for our rent-to-rent HMOs in Bedford. That is a significant chunk of change. And that can have a huge impact on your startup costs. Some people I know want to maybe put on interest-free credit cards or whatever. But it's a lot of money either way, it's going to be paid back. So a few years later, we then got involved in leasing furniture.
Yeah.
And again, there's loads of leasing companies out there. We can give you some links after this podcast, in the description of the podcast episode.
Yeah, we've actually got an episode specifically on that coming up next.
Okay,
yes, I won't say too much on leasing. Don't give the game away just yet.
Okay, what I will say is that even with the properties that we own and convert ourselves, we are leasing the furniture in those properties as well as the rent for HMO.
Okay, nice. So look, I think other than obviously buying new furniture, the one thing that I've done in a couple of our properties is go to charity shops. I don't know whether you guys have bought pre-owned, pre-loved furniture before, but I found it's quite a nice little gold mine, to be honest. Although you can't get everything matching because that's inevitable, you can get some quite nice retro bits and pieces. And depending on, you know, the property and the look and feel and the aesthetic, like you're saying, the sort of design and impression that you're looking to give, you can find some real gems in charity shops and secondhand shops. The only thing I will say is a little bit more time consuming, because rather than going to IKEA or going to, you know, a furniture retailer like Fusion Furniture, you do have to actually go around a few charity furniture shops and sort of pick out your bits and pieces. And then it's like orchestrating the delivery and, you know, making sure that the right pieces fit in the right rooms and all that kind of thing. So there is a little bit of extra work in that respect. However, on the flip side, you can pick up, I mean, you know, we have bought, you know, wardrobes for £30, which was super sturdy. And, you know, they still look good, need a little bit of cleanup, but for sure do the job. You know, chest of drawers for sort of £15-20, and the odd bedside table that we do have for £5 or £10. So there is quite a big saving, and particularly, you know, if you're, certainly perhaps doing your first one or two, it's an option for you to consider, only because your startup costs aren't going to inflate massively. And, you know, because you're a little bit more tentative, you're going to have, you're going to spend a bit more time looking around for furniture in any case. So that might be a decent option for you to consider.
Good tip.
Yeah.
There is one thing you need to be mindful there, and actually we do use recycle, because I'm a great believer of that, where we can recycle and where it can add value to our business that we do. So we would probably use that in our staging stuff, so to make the room look appealing.
Yeah.
But there are some fire regulations around furniture. Nice. So you have to be really, really mindful, particularly if you're going to be looking at mattresses, beds, anything, sofas, anything that is potentially flammable. If you bring furniture that doesn't conform to the furniture fire regulations, I can't remember what year that is, but again, maybe we can put a link in bottom of the podcast. You're opening yourself to some risk. But not only that, maybe some of your customers are saying, can I bring furniture in? And if they are bringing furniture in that don't conform to the fire regulations, you are still liable.
Yeah.
So we have just got a new customer join us, a lovely guy called Riley. He's come as a word of mouth recommendation from an existing customer. And the bed looked a little bit tired. The mattress was getting a little bit tired. It was getting to like 2-3 years old. So we went out and bought a brand new bed and mattress. Now, I did go to a local recycling shop.
Yeah.
So if anyone's in the sort of Bedford area, Biggleswade area, Stevenage, there's a really smart shop called Preen in Biggleswade, P-R-E-E-N.
Yeah.
They do recycled stuff. But we bought new mattress and bed base. So we got that all moved into the house. It was all looking good. And then he called us up and said he's going to bring his own bed. So that was a little bit disappointing. So we then went through a question process of saying, can you take a photograph of the label on your mattress to prove to us that the furniture that you're bringing in is going to conform to fire regulations? So why would I do that? The reason I would do that is that if there was ever a problem, and if, God forbid, there isn't, touch wood, there won't be, if there was a fire in his room, then there's no doubt that I've taken some precautions to check with the customer that the furniture that they're bringing in is does conform. But what we've also done is tacked on a task for Courtney that when she does the check-in, and when he arrives with his furniture, that she checks and takes another photograph of that mattress and of that bed, if it's a divan bed base, So again, that will go into his customer file. So we've got evidential proof that we're not bringing in furniture into the house that doesn't conform. Because if it all goes up in flames, there's only one person that the judge and the authorities are going to look at. That's going to be us. And therefore, we need to protect ourselves against that. That's a really important point that people need to be mindful of.
That's a good point. That's a really good point. So I think a lot of the conversation right now has been around bedroom furniture in general. I know there's a couple of other reasonably important rooms in the house, which is the kitchen and the bathroom. So there, you know, other than the standard stuff, I guess, in the kitchen, like toaster, kettle, cutlery, crockery, that sort of stuff. Is there anything in particular that you guys will generally add to your kitchen furniture in terms of getting stuff set up?
The key thing is, and we touched on this a bit in the last podcast episode, it's imagine yourself living in that house. Imagine like sitting, it's like walking, whatever the expression is, a mile in your customer's shoes. So imagine them living in your house. What would they expect and what would they need? Just use common sense.
Yeah.
Have what you have at home in your HMO properties, whether you own them or indeed do rent to rent. So for example, in some of our smaller HMOs that we've bought and converted up in Coventry, we won't have an additional common room.
Right.
So the kitchen is going to be the common room. Therefore, we'll need to have a decent table and chairs that fit in there. So that's going to be where people hang around. But it maps, to be honest, it's just really common sense.
Sure.
It's just having, you know, whatever you'd expect in that property to make it a comfortable place to live, that's really what I'd suggest.
Yeah, nice. And for the bathroom, anything in particular? Sorry, were you going to say something?
The only thing I was going to say was that when you look at the HMO regulations for your areas, and dependent on the number of people that you have in the property, then from a cooking facilities perspective, a microwave can be included as a method of cooking. So typically in a 5-bed property, we would have a four-ring hob and an oven and a microwave. And that is deemed by, I think, most councils as adequate for a 5-bed property. In a 6-bed property or a larger one, we put a couple of microwaves in. So if the kitchen doesn't have the space to put in either a larger range or a six-ring hob and a double oven or something like that, then adding microwaves is an acceptable method of food cooking or food preparation that will bring you into line with the regulations. But here's the thing. You don't want cooking in the bedrooms. So therefore, you have to be very clear with your customers when they come in what the consequences are of them bringing in microwaves, blenders, other cooking or methods of cooking and food preparation into their rooms. Because that could then be deemed, particularly if you've got en suites in your rooms, as a studio. And a studio attracts council tax. And if the local inspectors are knocking around and they ask to go in your property and you wander in a room and there's an ensuite in there, and whoa, what's that microwave doing in there? Right, bang, studio, council tax. And they're doing this. Honiston is the latest in Hertfordshire is the latest place that I've heard this. And a landlord friend of mine said, well, it wasn't supposed to be in there, so we've removed it. None of the other rooms had microwaves in it, so it was a one-off. And the council come back and said, well, we are going to put council tax on you because you've got plug sockets in your room. And he said, well, I'm supposed to have plug sockets in my rooms because the regulations say I need to have two double sockets. He said, well, yeah, anyone could put a microwave in there. So these are now studios. And that's the argument that some of the councils are coming back with in order to justify charging council tax on rooms which are now deemed as studios. So be really mindful and really set out the expectations when your customers come into the property that no food preparation whatsoever can take place in that room, not even food storage. You have to be really careful about those things. But with regards to bathrooms, one of the things.
No food preparation.
Just no microwaves in the bathroom.
Where are those plug sockets?
Have you ever had a sandwich in the shower?
No, I don't want. Let's not share that on the podcast.
No. So in the bathroom, one of the things that we found our customers really love are the sort of hanging storage that attaches to the shower rail. Not the rail that the curtain goes on, but the rail that the actual shower head attaches to. Particularly if you're tight for space, it's good to consider putting in some storage for shampoo bottles whatever other bottles tend to go in there. That's something that that we always do as a matter of standard. But just had another thought about the kitchen area. If you're putting in electrical appliances, obviously they need to be pap tested.
Yeah, yeah.
So dependent. So first of all, you need to make sure you've got a budget set aside for pap testing.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's actually easier, and I know this isn't environmentally friendly. Sometimes it's actually easier and cheaper to, after a year, to remove a £6.99 or a £10 kettle and go and buy a new one, because it doesn't need to be pap tested within the first 12 months, as long as you've got the proof of receipt, than to pay someone to come around and pap test it, which is going to cost you 12, 15 quid or whatever it might be. So again, if you've got a whole bunch of appliances across your portfolio or in your properties, then make sure that you have those kitchen appliances pap tested.
Yeah, that's a good one. We're just going through a round of pap testing now, actually. But just on the bathroom point, so I agree in terms of the storage. So we didn't used to provide additional or any storage in the bathroom other than what was existing until I conducted a viewing, and I had a couple come around and they said, oh yeah, the bathroom's all right, but you know, there's a bunch of shampoo and everything on there. And in our current place where we live, we've got assigned like drawers or storage for each room. And I was like, okay, great. This is a great idea. Yeah. So within the week, managed to order something off Amazon for the properties, you know, put it into all of the bathrooms, got feedback from the housemates just saying, look, you know, we've put in this additional storage just to make sure the bathroom's tidy, to make it easier to keep clean and all that kind of stuff. And to be fair, the general response we got was really positive, because, you know, it just shows an additional level of caring, I guess, for you know, their environment and their home to a certain degree. So it's nice now going forward, like we have made sure that as part of our setup process, we always have some sort of bathroom storage set out.
Yeah.
And also just, I guess as an aside, the one thing that I don't know whether you guys do it now is cupboard space in the kitchen. Until the last property, we never allocated shelving space per unit. And that has, to be fair, not caused a massive issue. But I know that on the back of getting a couple of bits of feedback from existing housemates, we've implemented an additional step in our setup process to say, look, you know, count the number, the cupboard space, and obviously try and allocate an equal amount of space to each room, and have the shelving space or the cupboards numbered so that the rooms will know if someone moves out of room two, then room two shelving space is free.
Yeah.
The only thing that we haven't done that with is the fridge, where it's still a little bit like the Wild West, so you know, you have to claim your space.
Fridge walls.
Yeah, fridge walls. But yeah, that is something else that has helped, just to you know, be a little bit fairer in terms of allocating space. And when people move out, you don't have to send around a group message saying, hey guys, can you make sure that you move such and such, or having, you know, one room taking over half of the kitchen with pots and pans and food and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I think that has been quite useful and something to bear in mind as part of the setup.
Yeah, we were exactly the same. We would never allocate storage space to an individual room, simply because what we were trying to do is to treat people like adults.
Yeah.
And then that's an easy way for someone new coming into the house to strike up a conversation about, well, where's my space, where's your space, and all that type of stuff. So, but
the problem we had was that when people move out,
yeah,
we don't know where the space is. So the tins could be there for a millennia. In the fridge, you could have cucumbers that look a bit ripe. And do we throw it away or don't we throw it? So now we're in the process of assigning space for rooms.
Yeah.
Not only, well, for three reasons. One is so that when people are moving in, they know where their space is. Two is that the cleaners, when they go and do the service clean on the room, will go and clean the storage space as well. So that's nice and clean when the person comes in.
Mm.
And three, when they leave, we know that after they've gone, if there's still stuff there,
yeah,
then we get rid of it. So that's helped us manage that whole sort of kitchen space and the freshness and the cleanliness of that space when new people come in.
Nice. Cool. Have we got anything else to add with regards to furniture selection and general setup? I know we're going to go into leasing specifically because I think that is quite a topic that requires a little bit more in-depth conversation around.
I think just one thing from me was going back to the bedrooms and the beds. Fusion do a really great line of bed bases that has storage underneath.
Right.
So again, if you've got rooms that are on a little bit small size, sort of 7 meters square, 8 meters square, 9 meters square, check out their range of bed bases with either drawer storage underneath, or you can actually have the bed bases with no drawers underneath, so that they can put suitcases, boxes, their own sort of storage, whatever they have. Some people have like these lips, Ziploc things, or they put books and all sorts of stuff in there. So we've put that into some of our rooms, particularly in attic rooms.
Yeah.
So if you haven't got sort of much space in attic rooms, then those are great solutions to consider.
Nice. Cool. You got anything else for that, Jamie?
No, I'm all done. I'm looking forward to the next episode.
No fridge rollers. Cool. So we'll wrap it up for this episode, guys. And thank you very much for listening, as always. And make sure you join us on the HMO Experience Facebook page and leave us your comments about this episode and any questions that you guys have got. You can also subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already and this is your first time listening. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google, we're on Spotify, we're on Stitcher, we're on Radio Public, we're on Pocket Cast, we're on a couple of others that I can't remember, and we're on Anchor. Join us on YouTube as well, where you can see all three of us in living colour.
Hello, three of you.
And look out as well. I know this is probably the first episode in a little while where we haven't mentioned hashtag HMO hacks. So I know that we're going to be going a little bit more granular on a couple of points that we've mentioned today. So look out for those on Instagram, Facebook and Twitter as well. And in the meantime, we've got another episode coming up next Monday where I think, Jamie, you're going to be interviewing
James Quinn from
James
Fusion
Furniture. Perfect. Cool. Who's going to give you some a lot more, I guess, detailed information around the solidity of their furniture and why Steve managed to jump up and down on their bedside tables without it collapsing. Is that right?
I am nearly 100 kilos. 100 bags of sugar. Can you imagine that?
Until then, look, thank you very much, guys. And it is going to be goodbye from Jamie.
Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye from Steve.
Goodbye.
And goodbye from me. See you later.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the HMO Experience. Don't forget that all of the resources mentioned in each episode will be available on our website, www.thehmoexperience.co.uk. We regularly update our website with new content to help you along your HMO journey. So make sure you check out www.thehmoexperience.co.uk for more details. Also, remember to join our online community by liking the HMO Experience Facebook page and subscribing to our YouTube channel.